Before we begin, we wanted to mention that this podcast relies on listener support. If you'd like to help us out, there are a few ways you can do that. One is by telling your friends about the podcast or anyone who you think might be interested. Another would be to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you're in a place to donate financially and you'd like to do that, we have a Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/backonthegrind. Signing up as a patron gets you access to things like our extended cuts of our episodes, as well as other bonus content. Thank you. Welcome to Back on the Grind, a podcast about life, music, people, and the stories that bring us closer. I'm so excited to share with you today a conversation with Sister Wife Sex Strike, an amazing, amazing folk rock band. And I've had the privilege to meet them and play a show with them before, and it was such a joy to talk with them. Our themes that we discussed ranged from songwriting to getting into folk punk to conflicted feelings about TikTok, as well as anarchism, religion, and spirituality, and the day wave of modern folk punk. We hope that you enjoy this episode as we bring you closer to Sister Wife Sex Strike. All right, Sister Wife Sex Strike, welcome to the pod. Y'all want to say hi?
Who are you?
Hello, I'm Pigeon. I play the banjo.
And I'm Moth. I play the guitar and the drums.
Excellent. So we've got a lot of stuff we can talk about today, but first, just how have y'all been doing? What you've been up to?
I've just been in merch making hell, question mark. I've been in my basement screen printing like 400 shirts ahead of our upcoming tour. So I feel great to not be doing that right now.
Nice.
Yeah. And I just got back from LA visiting my partner's family, and also am still booking two more shows for the tour we're about to leave on. Sending lots of emails and Instagram DMs, but hanging in there, excited for it.
Excellent. Well, I hope it goes really well. By the time our listeners are tuning in, the tour will have been over and will have gone magnificently with no
great. It was the best amazing. Tour we've ever
yes,
done.
Yes, with no problems at all.
No. Of course not.
So I'd love to hear a little bit about how you each got into folk punk.
Well, I'll go first because I've been into folk punk for a very long time. My older brother, when I was like maybe like 11 or something, like got into AJJ. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. But I didn't really have like a music taste at that point. And then Sean from AJJ and maybe one other person from AJJ, but I don't remember who, came to the music school I was taking guitar lessons at when I was like 11 years old or 12 years old or something. They were just like in town and like probably knew someone. Anyway, so they came and like talked to us. And then I like sort of listened to AJJ a little bit and then eventually discovered Days and Days also. And then once I had those two in the rotation, it was only downhill from there. And then like for a very long time, folk punk has been like the main genre that I listen to, usually with other things sort of coming in and out. But
Once you get past that Days and Days hump,
exactly.
Slope.
Once you get over what Days and Days sounds like when you first hear it, then it's like, oh shit, this is so cool.
I know exactly what you mean.
I was just like a punk kid in suburbia, and so I was like, yeah, that's how I did it. And then I got Moth into folk.
Yeah, I didn't. Pigeon and I met in summer of 2021, and I think in our first ever meeting you were talking about wanting to start a folk punk band because you knew I was somewhat musical, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. What's folk punk? And then you sent me like homework.
Yeah,
I remember. I think like Apes of the State was on there. I think Bridge City Sinners and Holy Locust.
I think probably Pat the Bunny.
Yeah, I got into Pat and Holy Locust pretty deep. And I'm like, yeah, this is cool. I can do this. Let's party. And then I feel like I'm still getting my folk punk bearings a little bit, but doing it through meeting the people in the scene that we play with. It's a weird.
You're doing it very. You're meeting
speed running folk punk. Yeah, a little bit,
you're meeting all these people as like people
right
first, and then being like, oh yeah, cool
yeah.
music.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the things I love about the folk punk scene is there's so much accessibility with as far as like the community goes. Like it's. If you want to become friends with your favorite folk punk band, you probably can in a lot of cases.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With some exceptions.
So much of folk punk is about like people, right? Like that's the core of the music. And so I think I haven't really run into any folk punk artists who like are trying to be stars. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it seems antithetical to the ethos of folk punk to be trying to be a celebrity. So speaking of celebrity, y'all have blown up on TikTok a bit. Let's talk about that. How did that come about?
How long? I mean, it was almost a year ago now that we started, probably.
Yeah, the progression was like we just started this band just kind of for fun. Mm-hmm. And I think our first album really reflects that. There's a lot of real goofy songs on that first album, and we would just like play shows in the park for friends and stuff, and eventually we enough people were like liking what we were doing, we were like, oh, I guess we should start an Instagram, huh?
Yeah,
and that felt gross and we didn't want to do it, but eventually we're like, okay, we should be able to communicate like what's going on, so we started an Instagram. And then I think we had in the back of our minds this idea of like, oh, TikTok would probably make sense, we should probably do it, like I don't like that place, like You are very much not on the app. Like you.
Yeah, I just have been through. I just grew up with like on technology and like have been on social media for like my entire adult life and most of my like teenage life also. And so like I very recently got like completely off of social media, and so like I haven't had a personal Instagram or TikTok in a very long time.
Yeah,
and so yeah, so like us getting more active on social media. At this point, Moth, when we're not on tour, Moth does all the social media because, like, I just can't be on it because it's like bad for me.
No, we don't. I don't think those places are very much good for the people. But it's also like just the realm in which music exists right now, right? Like, if you want to spread your stuff, that's kind of the place to do it.
Yeah.
But it was April 1st of last year.
Oh yeah.
Where I just started posting random clips of this I had. Just
well, and because I'm not on social media, I had no idea. Or I think Moth had mentioned that she had done it, but like I wasn't looking at the videos. Like I didn't know how many she had posted, what she had posted. She was just like, we have a TikTok and I'm posting stuff.
Yeah.
And then it was like, one day you came to me and you were like, so we've gone mildly viral on TikTok.
It was this like snippet that my mom had filmed of us singing a Muppet song together. And people liked it. And I was like, oh, wow, I guess we should probably run with this, huh? We should probably make some stuff intentional. Because, it was basically found footage is what I was posting before. Mm. And then we started doing actual covers and recordings of our songs and stuff. And then,
and now it's kind of our job.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, how did that feel as that was happening? Or how does it feel now?
I mean, it's just a tricky thing, and I've heard a lot of people talk about this, but it's like you want to make art and you want to ideally be able to not have to have a real job.
Yeah.
And so we are both in the point now where we can do both of those things, and that's for that I am grateful. And also you definitely don't, but I don't really engage with those apps beyond what we post. Mm. And like it feels like it's good to be able to get the message out to people so that we can like throw cool shows, you know, like that's kind of how I think about social media is like, this is just sort of advertising to sort of get some eyes to come to the shows. Cause it's the shows and like the actual music that I think we both care about. And TikTok is just kind of the path we must walk.
You see it as a tool and a means to an end rather than an end in itself.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I actually was just, I'm glad you mentioned shows. Cause like, I was just thinking like how much it's great that like people like our stuff and engage with us on TikTok. And it's like also like posting our stuff like publicly, especially on TikTok where like the algorithm controls all and it can just sort of go anywhere is like quite daunting. I'm just thinking about this specifically cause we released our pre-op EP on Friday. And with it, we released a video of us doing like a pop-up unauthorized show in a Starbucks. And I was just last night, because I also didn't, Moth had to tell me about this because I'm not on social media. Apparently we were like being, this video is being posted on like the like punk subreddit and the hardcore subreddit and the folk punk subreddit, Twitter, and all these things, and on Twitter. And like, and so I was like just going and scrolling through it. And I was like, wow, people are just like so like obsessed with being like mean here. And I was thinking about how much I'm looking forward to being on tour and playing shows, because it shows, it's like, that's the real thing that we're working towards. Exactly what you just said. Like, that's the end that this means is going towards. And people like are nice and kind, and like, we can like genuinely connect with people, as opposed to this, like, even with like our followers or our fans on social media, it is still this sort of mediated, like thing. Whereas
I think we know we're not for everybody, and we're definitely not trying to be for anybody other than ourselves, right? But I think like, because of just how music exists right now, you kind of have to be like, hello world, look at this. And like, most of the world's not gonna like it, so that's a weird thing. But the shows are great, because no one can, you know, you don't accidentally stumble into the Sister Wife sex trick.
Yeah, you know, and also you can't hide behind a screen. It's so much easier to be mean when you're also anonymous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how did that pop up in the Starbucks go?
I think it went great.
The actual event went incredibly well.
Yeah.
We knew, we expected that the management at Starbucks would not be super excited by what we were doing. And so we had like, we did a little scouting trip a few days before,
figured
out where we were going to play, had a team of like a group of like eight people who were, including us, who playing, filming. We had a getaway car. We had, we had a series of lookouts like to be like, to let us know when the cops were called, so we could get everyone out safe. But yeah, we had, we like,
it was great. We brought a crowd of like 40 or so people.
Oh, wow.
Bands.
Yeah.
They all came in. We did. We made it through two songs.
Yeah.
And then our lookouts were like, we gotta go. And
yeah.
Like, okay, that's it. And then everybody got out clean.
Yeah. Which that was the goal. The goal was like, I think this is like also the thing, like seeing how people react to it is like, the goal was like to do something weird and kind of like stress out some Starbucks security guards and like make some tourists be like, what the fuck just happened? And hopefully like, if the like underpaid baristas enjoyed it, then great.
Which it seems like they did.
Exactly.
The baristas were having a good time.
And so it was like, yeah, it, in that sense, like it went actually quite perfectly where I was like, and we didn't want anyone to get like hurt or arrested. Like we didn't want, you know, we didn't want to engage with the cops at all. And it was like, yeah, we got in, we were in there for probably 15 minutes at most. And then
I think everybody there, all the people we brought seemed to have a good time.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Even if we had posted it, that would have felt good.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Cops apparently arrived on the scene a solid 15 minutes after we were entirely gone. So we probably could have finished the full.
Yeah. our lookout had heard the security guards being like, oh, we should call the cops.
Yeah.
Because we expected more like direct confrontation with the security guards.
No, they never even talked to us.
But yeah.
Oh,
they
just
were like cleared people away and then called the cops. And so we just got to like, start a mosh pit for 10 minutes and then have a good time and then leave. We said after, that's we were awesome. Like, we should play two song sets all the time. This is put everything into
bring
it.
Bring it from the start. Yeah. They know, and then saved your voice a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Exactly. It was fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm really glad it went well. I love that y'all did that.
It was a lot of fun. I think the online reaction has been interesting because it did. It blew up across platforms that we don't even look at. And so it's been weird to like, I don't know. It's that whole thing of casting a broad net. I feel like this video more than anything we've ever done has probably reached people who never would have liked anything we do in the first place. So it's been like, which I guess maybe ultimately is a good thing, right? Maybe, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Some people will get with it, but the event and the video are two completely separate things.
Totally.
The event was great and everybody had a good time, and then the video has been like controversial on Reddit, yeah, which is just a weird thing.
Which, yeah, it was just, it was like, we're going to do this sort of silly thing as like a bit of promo, but also just to do a sort of silly thing and like, because fuck Starbucks. And then, yeah, online, it's like, as if we're trying to make like, we're trying to change the world with a pop-up show in a Starbucks. It's like, it's not that serious.
Yeah.
Like, it was just the silly thing that we did, like, which I feel like is a lot of like, I don't know. I don't think either of us are like, we're not like April Hartman, who is trying to like actively provoke people on social media all the time. But I think that like, we both like,
nothing but respect for
April. No, yeah, I love it. I love it. I don't have the strength for it. But I think that like, we're both like, our friendship and sort of the band in general, like, we're singing about pretty serious things, but we're also like really goofy and we like to have like a silly time and do funny things. Yeah. And like, that was, I think, a big part of that.
It's not
too.
That deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, that's so, I feel like goofiness is underrated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important. It's a vital part of my life, at least.
Yeah, for sure.
That's wonderful. So maybe we could talk a little bit about songwriting. What's songwriting been for like for y'all recently?
I was gonna say very recently, it's been almost non-existent for me because we like,
we recorded a bunch of songs in January. We had a bunch of, we had like something like 40 songs or that we had written
that were like potential to record.
We didn't record all of them.
Yeah.
But I think for the first time in the band's existence, we've kind of reached a point of like, oh, we don't actually have to be writing songs right now.
Yeah.
I think songs we write in the future better.
Yes.
To have a little break. But
I feel like, I mean, for me, it was like, before we started playing music together, like, I had never really written songs. I had written like a few when I learned to play the banjo, but wasn't like super, I wasn't doing it all the time. And then when we started playing music together, we just sort of started like sending songs back and forth. And that's been sort of, until now, has been kind of the vibe of our songwriting as a band, is like, we write a few things together, like sitting in a room together. But a lot of it is like, one of us will sort of write a song or have an idea, and then we'll send it to the other and they'll be like, oh, I like it, maybe we can add this or whatever.
Shush it up a little bit.
And then I feel like that like inspires each of us to like then be like, oh, well, like Moth wrote this really cool song, like I'm kind of inspired by this idea. There's a few songs out there that are like, at least that I've written, that are direct responses to songs that Moth wrote, because it like, it brought up this idea in me. So that's in general.
Songwriting is
works.
Very seasonal with us. We go through moments where we're both just writing a ton because we're bouncing off each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think for me, because we're able to like tour and do other things related to music, the sort of like the need to write songs that I had like maybe a year ago, because that was like my main way to engage with music, is a little bit less intense, because like we're lucky enough to like be able to go on tour and play our songs and like see other people play and stuff. So at least for me, it's been in a lull right now. But I don't know about you. I know you're still like writing songs, but I feel like you've written a lot of songs that wouldn't work as Sister Wave Sex songs recently.
I have problems with that. I write too many songs. It's just what I do when I have time. Like, that's the thing that I want to do if I have any free time.
Totally.
And sometimes I have to like set boundaries with myself about that, because I will drive myself crazy.
I was gonna say, also like, once you get an idea, I think you struggle to like not do it, like you kind of have to do it. Which is something I admire, but I imagine is hell living in your own brain.
No, I'll be trying to fall asleep and like keep myself up, like writing a song in my head and like writing down lyrics on my phone before I go to bed. Like, it's not, I got issues, but but some of them are good.
Exactly.
Some of the songs end up being okay.
Yeah.
I find that, you know, the more songs you write, the better chance you have of writing a good one. And sometimes you gotta write 30 songs before you write one keeper, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
I feel like of the stuff we recently recorded, I feel like I spent like months writing tons of songs that were okay, and then I had a week where I wrote like a bunch of songs. I was like, oh, these are good
ones.
And then I'm off that hot streak again. But
I get, after I see a band who I really admire in one way or another, I almost not always, but I often will go home and then like write a song that was like inspired by that. Like I wrote Barefoot, Dirty and Free after seeing Pigeon Pit open for AJJ. And those are two bands who like, I really admire their songwriting. And so seeing that, I was like writing lyrics, like at the edge of the pit. Like literally I had my phone out and I was like writing lyrics for what became Barefoot, Dirty and Free. And like, so that always helps me. If I ever feel like in a creative rut, I'm like, I just have to go do something like inspiring, like go see a band that I like.
But, that's funny. I have the opposite. Whenever I see a band, I'm like, oh, I could never do it that good. I should never write it. Like I saw Amigo the Devil in Seattle not too long ago. And I was like, wow, this is one of the greatest songwriters I've ever witnessed. Why do I, what am I doing with my time? Like, I could never write again.
I get that periodically, but not usually from live shows, usually from recorded. Like I was listening to Pigeon Pit and I was like, I'll never write a song again. I'll never write anything that like works like
that's
this.
That's funny too though, because I'll listen to stuff and I'm like, ooh, they could have done that and that would have been
cool. We're like, that's <hard."> That's so funny.
Yeah, that's so relatable. Both being inspired by great music and being depressed by it.
Exactly.
So what do you think are some of the through lines or themes? How would you characterize some of the themes of your songwriting?
I have an inclination to write about how the world is on fire and how it's directly someone's fault. And like, I don't know. It's like, I was in a band when I was like 17 and have been like writing songs like since I learned how to play guitar. And the thing I've always been writing about is like God. Like I cannot, I don't know. I just have so much religious trauma and think about that so much. And like how I very rarely write lyrics like before I'm like writing a full song. Like usually I'll just be playing guitar and then I'll just start singing whatever I happen to be feeling at the time. And more often than not, it's about God or it's about the mayor of Seattle. Like I don't know. I've been trying more recently to like tap into a more just like directly personal side of songwriting as opposed to bigger picture stuff that I think is super real and is super important to me, but I'm trying to get more specific in how I write, and that's hard. But that's a really fun challenge. I feel like I get one song like that per album usually.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, this hurts for me to listen to. Yeah. You know? But I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of trying to do the same thing, although I don't think I've really achieved it very much. Like I think I'm usually writing about the same things. I'm usually writing about like wow, I want to burn it all down, and or I'm also thinking a lot about God, but from someone who became like has developed a relationship with religion in my adult life and has I have atheist trauma. I have atheist parent trauma. So like I'm sort of doing the other thing of like trying to understand like what it means to be like a like anarchist and a punk and also someone who like has a relationship to like spirituality and God. And so those things are like both sort of very up for me. And I've been doing the same thing. I started a note on my phone that was like things to write songs about other than the government or God. And I'm like keeping ideas in there because I really admire stuff like that. Was part of I listened to Pigeon Pit to their most recent album. I was listening to it, I think, while doing some screen printing. And I was like, so much of they write all sorts of stuff, but a lot of it is about those like really beautiful, potent moments. And like, I really admire that and really struggle to write like that. And that was part of my like breakdown of like, I'll never write a song like this. Like, and this is what I really, really admire.
I would say, to be fair though, to give ourselves a bit of credit, I do think like the Burn It All Down songs are also deeply personal, right?
Exactly.
Those
are very real
things we're pushing up against. I think totally. We're all kind of pushing up against.
No, that's so true. I think, and I mean, you said this to me at one point. I think when I had that Pigeon Pit induced breakdown where you were like, hey, like, we can only write the songs that we can write.
Yeah, and,
like,
yeah.
At the moment, like, if that's the song that needs to come out, like, that's the song that needs to come out. And I think, like, yeah, I'm trying to give myself, sort of like what you were saying, like, I'm trying to give myself more options.
Yeah.
And give myself a challenge rather than just, like, the sort of obvious places that I go to for inspiration, and trying to look for alternate
I think sources. Artistically, anyone can only give what they have.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And
I think sometimes it can be a disservice to try to give something other than what you have, yeah. Right? You can definitely try to expand what you have, but I think, like, write the song that's there as best as you can.
Because, I mean, we're not, like, pushing to try and talk about, like, burning down the government or about God. We just are both anarchists who have very different, but, like, very complicated relationships to, like, religion and to God. Mm. So, like, that's the, it is genuine. Like, that's what we're thinking about. And, so,
which I actually think we conveniently stumbled into a very good band name for actually the kind of music we make, which wasn't an intentional connection we made.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the sort of religious element of system.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But also the sort of sex track, like, you know.
Yes.
Fight against the power.
Yeah.
That's true. That's totally true. So on the subject of anarchism and God, because these are also both two things I think about a lot.
Uh-huh.
What are some of the driving or consistent questions that come up for you, either about God or anarchism, or questions you think you're asking in your songwriting?
There's a long history of, like, Jewish radicals and Jewish anarchists, which I guess I am a part of that history as a Jewish anarchist. But, like, I think that, like, a lot of it is quite secular, which is great, and which, like, I have nothing but respect for. But I think for me, it's like I am very connected to, like, God and the, like, religious sides of Jewish tradition as well. And so, like, I'm always sort of thinking, like, how can my politics and my connection to Jewishness and Jewish thought and Jewish practice, how can I have those be the same thing and not separate things? I'm trying to, like, I think I'm trying to understand how can God be a partner in our liberation? Because for so long, I think God has been wielded specifically from, like, Christian colonists, but I think in general this happens elsewhere too, but, like, God has been wielded as a, like, a cudgel to, like, beat people into line. And I want to think about, like, how can I, like, redefine or recontextualize God or my relationship with, like, religion to be in service of my, like, radical politics.
I think our song Depth Below is actually a great example.
That's exactly what I was doing.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, I mean, that song's like about the Bible. Like, that song's literally like a story. That song's the story of Korach from the Bible, blended with, oh, there is, like, environmental destruction happening in the world, and, like, what is God going to do about it? And this is, like, my retelling of that story, sort of. Anyway, so yeah, so that, I don't know. That's, I think, what I'm doing, like, in my life in general, and that's why it comes through in songs a lot. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm doing something similar, but on the opposite side of the God equation a little bit.
Yeah.
I think I sing about, like, largely the Christian idea of God and anarchism a lot, but quite intertwined. And I think, like, I don't know, you asked, like, the question I'm asking, and I'm like, I think I frequently am singing to this God being like, is this really it? Like,
totally.
Is this the vision, right? Like, and also, I think more broadly to, like, I don't know, like, the people I grew up around, like, the Christian I grew up in, like, is this really what we think this God would want, you know? I tend to write a lot from sort of the perspective of the people causing harm in a lot of my songs, almost sort of satirically. And, like, I think that's like, there's a reason that's happening, I think, for me so consistently, because I'm just really, like, trying to understand a perspective that could cause harm and the reason you might feel that way. But I also think I always reach a point in attempting to understand that where I truly cannot. I truly find a difference that cannot be sort of reconciled. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I think both in crying out to a God and just in like looking at what is happening in society and civilization, right? It's like, is this really the best case scenario?
Yeah.
Like, is this what makes sense? And I think not.
I think not. Yeah.
I think not. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I feel like also you saying that, I'm thinking I think both of us are probably like, there is a sort of calling out to people of like I think you are calling out to like the people you grew up around, mm-hmm. the sort of, I don't know, evangelical Christian whatever nonsense, and like the people in there. And I think like I'm sort of coming at it the other way of like I have been around like radicals and anarchists since I was a teenager, and mm-hmm. I have been like, I feel like this is missing something. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that it doesn't have to be like God or like religion or whatever, but like it's missing the sort of sense of something grander.
You're trying to show that bring the anarchists to the higher power.
Exactly.
And like I'm trying to bring the people who believe in the higher power.
Exactly.
To anarchy.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's like, that's probably why it works, because it's like we have these two things. I mean, we talked about this somewhere else where it's like, it's probably quite confusing to hear all our songs and try and parse like
my God diss track followed by your God love song.
What is this? Yeah. What does this band think about religion? It's probably quite confusing, but
I love that. I think that's fantastic. I'm definitely of the mind that bringing God followers to anarchism and bringing anarchism to some form of spirituality or groundedness and love, it's important work. I think some religious people talk about the importance of contemplation and action, mm-hmm. and both are essential to the other. Mm-hmm. If it's all action without any form of reflexivity or groundedness mm-hmm. in love or spirituality, it will probably turn into, you know, unbridled hate. And if there is contemplation or spirituality or religiosity with no action, then it's useless.
Yeah.
So I think it's great that y'all are embracing those things in different ways.
I think the division between like sort of spiritual belief and sort of anarchist or radical or whatever worldview is not real,
exactly.
or at least doesn't have to be, right? Like these thoughts that are easy to think of as being opposites of each other are actually quite close. And I think we kind of all want, we all want things to go well and people to be okay in general, right?
Yeah.
We just have different ways of what we think that means.
Yeah, so just today for a class, I visited a Catholic worker house here in New Haven. Mm-hmm. That is now called Rosette Village because they have about 20 to 25 folks living in their backyard, some of them in mm-hmm. tents, some of them in tiny homes. And I interviewed Mark, one of the guys who helped to start it. And the house has been around since the 90s, but they just started inviting people to live there a couple of years ago after the city mm-hmm. cleared out some encampments. But I was talking to Mark, and you know, all this action that they're doing is very grounded in their faith and what they believe, and mm-hmm. what they believe Jesus actually talked about. And he said, "Blessed are the poor," he said, "Woe to the rich." You know, it's like very clear, and people like to ignore those parts of it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it should be intertwined, and when it's not intertwined, something's definitely missing.
I think for both of us it seems so obvious that thing is missing, that like that wall between those two like doesn't actually need to be there. It's like totally false, and like
I also think so many of like, I don't know, my sort of the songs that lean towards a critique of God are more mm-hmm. about just the institution, right? And like that's the same as any sort of anarchist songwriting, right? It's like, it is the way you are twisting things that is the problem here, not the things themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where do you see spirituality in a folk punk show?
I have an answer immediately, but I don't need
to.
Okay.
No, you take it.
I just think about this a lot. Like, I think like there was the founder of the Reconstructionist movement in Judaism, Mordechai Kaplan, wrote about like God as like the sort of like connective tissue between like people and friends and lovers. And I think this was him. I might be misquoting, but that like sort of like we like God only exists so much as we create God in community. And so like, I feel like that to me is like, I mean, this is a joke we say often, but we'll see something like cool happen or silly happen. We'll be like, that's God. And like, that is like, I think like a joke. And also like, at least for me is at least somewhat real. And I think for you is probably real too.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I feel like for me, it's like, oh, that sort of connective force of like, we all come together. When I was in college, I took a class called Bad Art and wrote about folk punk for that class. And one of the things that my teacher, this like 70-year-old like gender studies professor, told me was she was like, yeah, in a mosh pit, like it is like a true site of like trust and care for each other, because you can't actually like it is genuinely dangerous, but everyone there is like caring for each other, and everyone there is like invested in everyone having a good time and everyone being safe, at least at our shows, I think, in general. Yeah. I've been in pits where that is not true, but I think like even at our shows and even at like these huge Days and Days shows when we went on tour with Days and Days, like that was the vibe too. It was like, you're not out to hurt anyone any more than they want to be hurt. And like, you're going to help them like get up if they fall down, or help them get out if they need to get out. So I don't know. Yeah. All of that is like, I'm like, that is so beautiful. And so like, spiritual to me, and is some of the places where I felt the closest to like the source of it all, is like trusting that like all these people around me have got me, and that we're here to like embrace joy together.
I also think, like, I don't know, having grown up in church, there is something, though I disagree with a lot of some of the beliefs that were there, right? Like, I think there is something quite beautiful in having people who were kind of on the same page find each other for a moment, because I think like we kind of live in a bit of a world that sort of sets you up to be isolated, right? And I think like
that's so true.
Coming to a show where we can all be like, the world's on fire outside, and that's not great, and also we're all here to enjoy a night and help each other and be together, I think like
totally.
that's church, right? That's God, like that's community to an extent. And that's why I like show. It's fun to be around people who are all happy to see each other. Like, I don't know, where else do you get hundreds of people in a room who are just like
hundreds of gay people
hundreds of trans children in a room being like, hey, we got each other, right? And we can just let the guard down and have a good time. Like, I think that's important.
Totally.
I love that. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. As someone who, you know, conceives of God as a holy trinity, you know, I really, my conception of God is a self-giving community of love. And I think that can translate into how we're meant to be together. Mutuality, non-hierarchical. I could talk for a while about this because I'm writing a paper about improvisation, anarchism, and the Trinity. But but yeah, you know, I think that how we think about God matters, you know. Whether we believe God exists or not, how we think about the world matters. Those things matter because it informs how we are with each other, how we live with each other, you know? If someone believes that God really loves and accepts everyone just as they are, well, maybe you should do that too. You know, so. And I think, you know, folk punk, I love it for so many reasons. And one of the reasons I think it's great is not only because of the music and the beliefs, but also the community and the striving towards creating a safe space. And, you know, queer and trans folks really need safe spaces right now. So when we were talking about what we could talk about on this podcast, you said we could talk about, or Moth said we could talk about, the day wave of modern folk punk. So what do y'all have to say about that?
I mean, I think like, I think you know more historically the progression of folk punk, right? But as I see it, coming into it only in the past few years, like, at least at our shows, right? And that's, you know, maybe more specific demographic, but it really does seem to be like young trans people and gay people finding each other. And like, I see people like making friendships at our shows.
I was going to mention that.
Come together at the next one, right? And I think like, I think it makes sense, right? As a people or whatever, like, we don't have it super great right now anywhere in the world. And to be able to mutually acknowledge that with through art and also through the people around you, like, I think it's kind of destined for folk punk or something like folk punk to end up being very, very gay and trans. Or whatever, right? Like, like, I don't know.
No, I feel like we were talking about this maybe on another podcast interview we did, but we were trying to sort of understand like why folk punk is so gay and so trans. I think part of it is just like, it's sort of a, you know, positive feedback loop of like, you have more like more gay people in the scene. Like, and so then it just like invites others, you know, to come. But I think there's also something about like the sort of low barrier to entry of it all too, that feels very like, welcoming. I think people like to joke.
We're all freaks here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And it's like, I think people like to joke also about like, oh, folk punk sounds like shit. One, I think a lot of it doesn't. Sure, there's plenty of it that does. But like, but I think that like that sort of vibe of like, oh, we actually are like, we're more interested in like coming together and like making music. And we're like, we still want to like, at least, you know, some of us like want to like make like music that sounds good. But it's more than that. It's like, it's about like, we're trying to come together and make the songs we want to make without, I'm just thinking of what April said in the, on Reddit, on the hardcore subreddit where people were being mean to us about our Starbucks video. She was like, you're just mad because you need $10,000 worth of equipment to have a good time. And I'm like, I think there's something so beautiful about like, oh yeah, like, go, like pick up a guitar, like pick up a banjo, whatever, like make an instrument, like start playing the spoons. And like, I think it welcomes all sorts of people in, especially in like a scene where like the greater punk scene can be kind of gatekeepy and homophobic and shitty.
I also think folk punk is such a truly such a broad term, right? And I think the reason that all of these things get grouped together and that is an energy about them, right? I think that's what folk punk is. It's a specific type of energy. And I think like if you are a gay person or a trans person who has, you know, put consideration into sort of societal expectations of who you should be and have chosen to live in a way that is sometimes actively against those.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be more drawn to that energy that embraces that style of thinking, right? Which I think is what the folk punk energy is. It's like, looking at this and being like, you know, I disagree with the main take on this, right?
Yeah.
Like there's gotta be a better way.
Totally.
Yeah. There's an optimism about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, and it's a beautiful thing. So what's in the future for y'all?
Death and suffering. Not like one way.
As we record this, we're about to embark on a tour, which will have already wrapped up by the time this comes out.
And it was legendary.
It was amazing.
I'm sure your listeners hearing so much of
the
drama, the highs, the lows. It's a miracle that we're still a band.
I was gonna say, what if we're not a band?
The acts formerly known as Sister My Sex. No, but we have more shows coming up this year. We're playing Compost Heap in July, and a lot of shows around that, and we're doing a tour with Apes of the State in September.
Can we talk about that now?
That will be announced by the time this podcast is out. Which is going to be crazy.
That's
going to be
exciting.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
That's great.
And we've got some stuff in the pipeline.
We've got some more songs in the chamber.
Yeah, some more songs that may or may not be released someday.
That may or may not be about God and anarchism.
Yeah.
They're all maybe about God. Every song's about God. Come on.
That's true.
Every song's about outer space.
Every song's about outer space. Every song's about God. That is true. I don't know. We'll have a whole sort of like, we'll run around Compost Heap. We'll release more deets about like those shows, stuff with apes.
We'll keep moving.
Yeah. Fantastic. Moving right along, if you will.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I have so enjoyed this conversation. I feel inspired to write songs and do some things I haven't been doing in a while because I'm currently in grad school. Yeah, this was a wonderful conversation. I look forward to seeing y'all at Compost Heap. And this was great. Thank you so much for taking the time. And
thank you for having us. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, take care, y'all.
Cool. Bye.
I hope you all enjoyed listening to my conversation with Pigeon and Moth. It was such a delight to get to speak with them. They're such amazing human beings and artists, and I hope everyone gets a chance to see them live sometime. I know they're touring this year, so be on the lookout for that. Thanks, as always, for tuning in and supporting us in all the ways you do. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.